Welcome to Out With Dan, the podcast that spotlights and examines the voices of LGBTQ+ authors, characters, and our allies. Together, we lift our voices and we tell our stories. I'm Dan White. Join me as I chat with this week's author. Hello, and welcome back to Out With Dan. Today, I'm excited to talk to Taj McCoy about The Good Ones Are Taken. Welcome, Taj.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's great to see you again. Thank you for coming back. I appreciate it.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. I had so much fun last time.
Thank you. I want to read the first line of your acknowledgement, something I don't typically do, but it says, first, last, and always, Father God, I thank you for another day and another opportunity to connect with others through love and joy. I have only met about 40% of the authors I've interviewed have I met in person. And I will say that when I met you, you simply glow with love and joy. Is there something you do on a daily basis?
You know, it's actually really funny. I used to work in the law school admissions world, and a student who had been trying and trying and trying to get in, I was able to give a chance. And to this day, he's now like big attorney in the South, and every day he sends me a devotional. And so that's literally how I start my mornings.
I love that. I love that. During the pandemic, a friend of mine started sending 3 gratitudes in 1 text every day. And we've done that until today. And it makes such a difference to see that someone is succeeding, or maybe someone is struggling and maybe you have a word for them. So
yeah,
that's beautiful.
I love it. It actually, you know, it's something I look forward to. And it's the funny thing is that that friend and I, we don't talk every day, but every day I can count on receiving that devotional. And so it's really, really a blessing.
And it is just that small connection, I think, that makes such a difference. It doesn't I don't need someone all up in my business trying to help me with my life. I'm going to succeed or fail as I go. But it's nice to have that connection. I love that.
Yes, I agree.
So now that sort of leads into perfectly naturally, because this is how I am, into your 3 friends that make a return. We have Maggie and Savvy and Joni, and you have created with them such a strong female bond. How important is that to you?
That's a great question. You know, in building these particular friends, you know, they started with In Savvy Sheldon Feels Good as Hell. And I basically, when I was writing Savvy, I was partially doing it for myself to get closure from some things that I had experienced. And so in creating Maggie and Joan, I was building the friends that I would have liked to have had for myself. And, you know, Joan is like this nurturing, loving, big-hearted person who is just fiercely loyal. She will jump into the fray, but she prefers to be a lover, not a fighter. Maggie could care less about what anybody else thinks. She will be the first one to jump into a fight, no problem. But she's loud and proud in a way that, you know, Savvy admires. And so then in moving over to The Good Ones Are Taken, you know, now we get Maggie's story and we get to see, like, yeah, she's bold and she's strong in a lot of ways, but there are times when she second guesses. And so we get to see that vulnerability.
And I think that that is something we do in real life. So that's one of the things I told you before we started recording is that when I read your books, these characters are real. They are 3-dimensional through and through. And I can feel each of these friends and how, you know, how they interact with life and with each other. And I love the fact that you have retained a respectfulness between them.
Yeah.
I mean, they may smack one on the back of the head and say, you know, why are you being stupid? But they do it with love. It's not malicious in any way. And that's a blessing to be able to read.
Yeah. You know, like, I think the ideal friends are those ones where, yes, you want to be able to celebrate each other's wins and, you know, have those joyful moments. But you want those same friends to be able to call you out when you're really not doing what you should be doing, and they know that that's something that you want, not allowing friends to be complacent or to give up on things that we know they really want, you know? And so in building these friends, I didn't want them to be ones where there was like backbiting or jealousy, because that's not real friendship. I wanted like a couple of authentic friends that, you know, they're going to be there through the hard times. They're going to call you out and have some tough conversations with you. But they're also going to be your biggest cheerleaders. And so that was really the goal.
And you succeed really well at that. I mean, I root for all three of them, and I want them to be my best friends, because you know, that's a fun thing as a reader. You know, sometimes I read in books and I think to myself, oh, I wish that person was real and, you know, they were my friend. Or if I'm really having a bad day, I might like that serial killer that knocks off a whole bunch of people to get them out of my life. So
exactly.
So I do want to ask you something that's out of left field, because you know that's what I do occasionally. So I assume your parents are big mystery readers. Is that right?
That is a great guess. Yes, it is. That is accurate. Well,
so in the acknowledgments, which I really did read, you know, I noticed that I guess they want you to kill someone on the page. Oh, and I love that.
My dad, he tells me all the time, he's like, you know, if you really want to land on the bestseller list, you've just got to kill one of your characters. And I'm like, that's not really how it goes in romance, but I'll find a way. We'll work it out at some point.
Yes, you know, I do agree with him. It might put you on the bestseller list, but in the romance genre, it might get you canceled, because
correct.
People who read romance want the love.
That's right. Someday when I write, you know, a cozy that goes slightly out of bounds of cozy, because of course I still want the intimate scenes to be there. That's when we'll have our moment with killing someone off, but not right now, which
not
disappoints
right now,
him, but he'll get over it.
Well, you know what? Tell your dad that I have tons of suggestions if he needs to read other authors besides you, because besides romance, which I do love, I am very fond of a deep, dark mystery or suspense thriller. Yeah. So I do a lot of those. I try to balance it to find my light and my dark.
it's I mean, and there's so many good ones right now too. So I've been sending every birthday, every holiday, I send him new ones, and he gets all
nice.
Excited. So yeah,
nice. So one of the things that Garrett does with Maggie is he always greets her with "Hello, gorgeous."
Yes,
and I love that so much, and I feel like. That it's a lot more than just her physical looks. It's her spirit that he sees. Was that a big point for you to incorporate that term?
Yeah. You know, there's a few things with it, right? Like for Garrett, like he's known her, he's seen her at her best, at her worst. He's seen her made up and completely not. And yet, like, whether she's gushing at watching Pride and Prejudice or, you know, scarfing down pastrami sandwiches, you know, like that's his best friend. He thinks that she's a light. And so to him, she's gorgeous no matter what. But it also reminds me of my best friend's wedding. And Dermot Mulroney says that to Julia Roberts. And it's just one of those moments where it's just like, ah, oh, that's hot. Keep saying it. You know, like, you know, Maggie doesn't realize that she has feelings for Garrett, but there's this just almost like years later kind of romance that they have, where it's just like they've built so much of their life together already, that it's just kind of easy for them to like transition once they finally do. And so, you know, like, I think it's one of those things that it's like, you know, he says it every time, because no matter like what her situation is on the outside, she's always gorgeous to him.
And I love that. I love that. So at the beginning of the book, this was something that I laughed out loud because I think every woman, unfortunately, has to experience this at one time. So Maggie's having a martini and this guy sidles up next to her. And basically he goes right into the jugular. And so how important was that to incorporate into your work? Because I think every woman who reads that's going to be like, oh, I know this guy. I know him.
You know, there are several of those, I think, throughout the story that women have encountered. But that one in particular, it just felt so accurate. And because in that first scene, I'm trying to have her have three strikeouts, I was like, that's kind of the perfect one to put in the middle. Because, you know, she has the first one and then this guy comes up and it's like he doesn't even think like, hey, let me get to know you. Like, hey, like, what's your name? Instead of, hey, you want to go somewhere? Like, let's get out of here. And she's like, sir, you just skipped a whole bunch of steps.
It is so, it's so sad, Taj, because I've had number one and number two happen just as in your book, because I've actually thought somebody was talking to me, her strikeout number one. And I was like, you know, it's like, you know how someone waves. And of course, I'm waving like a fool and they're not even waving at me, but I'm so sure they're waving at me.
It definitely happened to me. And I definitely was humbled by that experience.
Yes, it will make you sit back down quickly. Sure. It's like, oh, Lord, I hope not everybody knows how stupid I am. So, and I love it. I love the fact that you brought Teddy back. Yeah. I love Teddy from the first book. And so when you bring back a chocolate lab, I'm just like, oh, my God, I love that. And I feel like he's like the best dog on earth because he's so sensitive and he feels all of the people around him. And I love that.
Yeah.
Do you have a dog or a cat?
I don't personally. And it's just because I travel so much. I would feel really bad if I had to leave them with others all the time. I am getting close to that. I have the itch to get one. But we've always had dogs in my family. And so my parents have one now named Manny, and he's a grumpy little old dog. But you know, like we've had several throughout my lifetime, and it's just, there's definitely a relationship and a sensitivity that I find dogs to have, and pets in general, where I'm just like, oh gosh, like, it's so fun to have that relationship and to have this being that is so excited to see you when they do, and that gets a sense of, oh, you're not happy right now. Let me get closer to you. And I love that, you know, where conversely, Maggie has a cat who, you know, most of the time would probably sell her for some salmon. But there is a moment where Maggie's really down and Penny, her Himalayan cat who has the face of Grumpy Cat, is sensitive to it and just comes and nuzzles her a little bit.
I did like the fact that Penny was a nicer cat, because cats can be evil sometimes. Sometimes they're just wonderful animals. But, you know, I have a friend that has an evil cat that honestly, you know, not seeing that cat makes me very happy. So at least Penny was sort of loving. I liked that.
Yeah, she preferred Garrett to Maggie, which was funny. But she was in most instances, she was sweet. She was just kind of lazy. My grandmother had a cat that just absolutely hated me. And so I knew anytime I walked by, it was going to like just come after me.
And I think to myself, every time that happens with my friend Milner's cat, I'm like, what is it about me? I was nice to you. I tried to pet you. I tried to feed you. Yes. You just wanted to be that animal. So that's, I was like, right. Really?
That's right. Just pick and fight. Well,
right. And so one thing, I don't have animals either. And most people that know me personally think that I hate animals, but that's not the case. And I'm going to tell you what in your book speaks volumes. So when they go to Thailand,
yeah,
as a like as a surprise, and Maggie does these things for her friends. Uh-huh. That's why I don't own an animal, because if you say to me, here's a ticket to Thailand, I'm like, okay, let's go. Go goodbye, animal. You can go to the shelter, which, you know, you cannot do that. But I'm like, that's why I don't have an animal.
Yeah, I would feel so guilty because, you know, like when they are in those situations, they panic and they get scared and they worry they're never going to see you again. And you know, when you finally do see them, they freak out because they were just so beside
traumatized. That's right. That's right.
So I don't want to do that if I can avoid it.
Totally agree. I don't like to be traumatized either. So, I mean, you know, I sort of look at it. If I'm going to have an animal in my home, then we're going, I want us to both have a happy relationship. Yes. So once again, you bring us some good sex scenes. And I always think your book should come with a pack of cigarettes. I mean, honestly.
Thank you.
Yes. They're lovingly and tastefully done, but yet at the same time, extremely erotic and loving. And I enjoyed it.
Thank you. You know, it's so funny because people, a lot of times when they're talking about the sex scenes, they'll either say something like, wow, this was spicy, or it was decent. And I'm like, wow, what are you looking for? Like, how much does it have to go for this to be like on level for you? Like, I'm just curious, you know?
I mean, I was totally jealous. I mean, honestly, I was jealous. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm like, oh, all of that looks like that would be fun. So yes, I do wonder sometimes, what is that level that somebody would say, yes, you know? So.
Yeah, because like I had someone say, oh, this is like two chili peppers spicy. And I was like, really? Okay. So if it were in every chapter, would that be five? Or what gets you to the level of five? I'm curious. I'm probably not at that level. I'll just admit it. But, you know, at some point I'm just like, okay, well, and then other people are like, wow, that was a little too spicy for me. And I'm like, okay, so... It's the same as seasoning, right? Like you just, not everybody uses it. Some people overdo it, whatever. It's fine.
Right. We're good. I think it's not gratuitous. So you put it in it where it needs to be. I mean, you're very sensitive to where you put it because it's a moment in that person's day. And that's the part I like so much. It's not something to shock me. It's something to watch that person's day unfold. And this is what they experienced.
Yeah. It has to make sense for the plot. And, you know, it has to be a moment that is necessary to move the plot forward. And so, when it comes to her and Blake, who's our gym love interest, our handsome heart surgeon, that moment versus, you know, Garrett, both of those are very different experiences, but both of those help to inform, you know, parts of the ways that Maggie sees both of these people. They're necessary. When they're folded in is very intentional.
I love it. I love it. So, was it harder to write friends to lovers versus say just someone you meet, or you know, was that easier?
To me, it's harder because it's written in single point of view. There are these things that Maggie simply does not know. But I know them to be true. And so trying to have those reveals happen and moments when it should have clicked for her, but it doesn't, I'm always aiming for that experience for the reader where they're like, I just really want to shake Maggie because it's right there. What is wrong with you? Make the decision already.
Right.
But she's trying to both be objective and also protect her heart. And so she's just trying to make doubly sure that she's sure. It's one of those things, you know, friends to lovers, you're dealing with all kinds of emotions. You're dealing with having to take a risk and weighing if it's going to be worth it and worrying that you're going to lose both your friend and your love interest. And, you know, when you make that kind of like dark side of the moon moment, you know, like how egregious is it going to be and how are they going to be able to come back from that? And so it's to me, it was tough. That particular part of the book where once she knows his feelings and she's got to start reconciling their whole friendship because she realizes that he's felt that way the whole time they've known each other and never said anything. That does something to you. It makes you question a lot of things because if that were really true, how come I didn't see it before now? And how come everybody else sees it and I don't? Like, what is it that I'm missing, right? And Maggie, having the ego that she doesn't want to admit that she missed something. And so there's all of those components to it that you're trying to fold in, but still make it feel believable, even though like we know these things are happening in real life, but sometimes in books, it ends up being kind of one note. And then it kind of feels like it's falling flat and it doesn't quite give you the complexity that you need to see in order to understand why it's taking her so long to get to the decision she gets to.
Well, you do it so well, Taj. And a thing about that, too, is, you know, I think that when you're someone's friend, you want to help them and guide them. But, you know, darn well, you simply can't force someone to see it. So, of course, Maggie does have to sort of peel the onion layers to find out where her heart is. And I thought you did a great job at that. Congratulations.
Thank you. You know, the other part of it is, of course, she's like, if I say no, am I breaking his heart? Do I lose my friend anyway? Like there's just so many pieces to that she had to consider. And so I was trying to relate to her in that moment. I've definitely been through a friend situation before. And so that kind of helped to inform some of it as well, because you're just kind of like, okay, there's all these things. And sometimes you think it's worth it to try. And the other person just is like, they are interested, but they are not willing to take the risk. And so,
and I think that word is a big component, risk, because, you know, there are so many things that could go right. And there's so many things that could go wrong. And it is, you must be very brave to do that. That's not for the faint-hearted, for sure.
It's not. That's true.
So you're now out on the streets here in the US, and I believe you came out in England at the same time or the week before, is that right?
3 weeks before.
3 weeks before. I loved that. I thought that was unique for an American author to go out first in England.
Yeah, I didn't know that it was happening in that order until maybe the week before it came out in the UK, because for the other books, they came out the same week as Zora. Both Savvy and Zora came out in the UK. Okay. And so it's kind of an interesting reverse, but it helped to build some buzz over there first. And things seem to be like going well in the UK in terms of my books. And so we're just kind of plugging along and seeing, you know, how this is going to go. And now that the US one is out, that actually helps build more buzz on the UK side too. And this time around, the covers are very, very similar. It's just that the UK one is in teal. Because I already have a pink cover in the UK for Zora. And so it's a lot of fun to see both of them, and I'm getting tagged quite a bit on both sides.
Nice. Once again, the book is The Good Ones Are Taken. It is a beautiful cover. I love the cover.
Thank you.
So do you have a social media or a website you'd like to share?
Sure. My website is TajMcCoyWrites.com. And the social media that I probably use the most often is Instagram. And that one is The One Who Will, the number one who will. But I am on Twitter, TajMcCoyWrites. I'm on TikTok, but haven't updated in like 6 months. And that's Taj McCoy.
I feel you there, sister.
It takes so much energy. I don't know what it is about TikTok, but literally I'll upload like 3 videos and then I'm gone for like 3 months. I'm exhausted. But totally understand. It's so easy and quick, and like they're all in the same place and it'll post to multiple things. It's just easier.
It is so much easier. Thank you so much for joining me again, Todd.
Thank you for joining me for this week's episode of Out with Dan. You can find more information about this podcast and its host at outwithdan.com, on Twitter at @outwithdan, and on Instagram and Facebook at @GoOutWithDan. This podcast is hosted by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and the theme music is provided by bensound.com. Join us again soon for the next episode of Out with Dan.